I was diagnosed in 1978, but everything went to pieces starting when I was 9 years old in 1958. Just to make it simple, I was at a movie theater and I was attacked and sexually assaulted. My first depressive episode came about 3 or 4 months after that. And continued throughout middle school, high school, college. It was an experience that I had no idea anyone could have. It was as if I was worthless. I wanted to die. Thought I had no friends, thought nobody loved me. And I didn't love anybody else either. It was just a terrible feeling.
Welcome to Linda's Corner, where we bring more hope, healing, and happiness to the world. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be talking about dealing with mental illness. I'm delighted to welcome Stephen Wilson. Stephen was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 1978. He is a mental health support group facilitator and the author of Teetering on a Tightrope, My Bipolar Journey, which is available on Amazon, and I'll include a link in the show notes. Welcome, Stephen. I'm so glad that you could join with me today.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, and I am delighted to have this conversation. And I am so grateful for people like you who are willing to shed some light on bipolar to help get rid of some of the ideas that people have and the misunderstandings, and let's have some actual learning. So is it okay if we start with your experiences and the reality of dealing with bipolar?
Sure. I was diagnosed in 1978, but everything went to pieces starting when I was 9 years old in 1958. Just to make it simple, I was at a movie theater and I was attacked and sexually assaulted. My first depressive episode came about 3 or 4 months after that. And continued throughout middle school, high school, college. It was an experience that I had no idea anyone could have. It was as if I was worthless. I wanted to die. Thought I had no friends, thought nobody loved me. And I didn't love anybody else either. It was just a terrible feeling. Now, you have to understand one thing about depression and bipolar. They move up and down, kind of like a roller coaster. So I was not in the throes of depression continually all those years. It was up and down. So I could still have a lot of good times, even though I had a lot of bad times. When it hit the worst was right after I graduated from college. I started dealing with suicidal ideations. I never tried to kill myself, but I got pretty damn close. And in 1971, I was in a fight with my father, and then I found myself in a mental institution for 3 weeks. And right after that, they let me out and had diagnosed me with clinical depression. Well, they had a few drugs back then. You have to realize that 50 years ago, there was very little treatment for mental illness, like the Dark Ages. But they had some medication, and they tried it on me, and none of it worked. It made me sick, or numerous things that I can't remember how bad it was. And that was 1972. And I had the next 6 or 7 years that I was terrible, down a lot, fired from a lot of jobs, couldn't keep a job, got married in 1972. And the day after I got married, I told my wife we made a mistake. That was because my mind was so out of control. I couldn't stop the voices in my head. And that kind of stuff continued for the next 6 years. Then my psychiatrist came in and says, you know, I think I made a mistake. You're bipolar. Well, hell, I didn't know what bipolar was. He explained it to me, but back then they really called it manic depression. So there are different medications for bipolar than there are for depression. He put me on lithium, which was the gold standard back then, still is really. And right away, I started feeling better. I got about 50% better and was able to work in my family business for the next 20 or 30 years and made a living, had a family, and was functional, but still had a lot of bad times. The worst that was going on at most of those years from 1978 to 2000 was the ruminations. Now, ruminations are things you can't stop whirling around in your head. All the things that I would think I had done wrong and hurt people or ruined their life. I couldn't stop thinking about it. It just drove me crazy. So that went on until the year about 2000 when I was doing so badly with the ruminations, they put me on a new pill that had come out, and that got me over the top. That cut those ruminations down by 80%, and I've been pretty good ever since.
So you have had the experience of going through this very frustrating mental illness when there wasn't good treatment. Like you said, it's the dark ages where we knew something was wrong. People knew it's like something is not right, but we don't know how to fix it. And now medications are improving, understanding is improving. And since you're helping in Arizona guide some treatment programs, what kinds of things do you notice that are available now to help people that weren't available before?
Okay. First of all, you said treatments are improving and the word out about mental illness is improving. Well, that was the appropriate word to you because it is just improving. It has not gotten over the top yet. The stigma against mental illness is still very bad. Only 50% of the medications that are available for depression and bipolar and other mental illnesses are effective for that, whatever patient they're working on. So it's not, even though it's the year 2023, it's not as if you're feeling bad and you can pop a pill and get better. It may work, it may not. So many of the people have problems with medication. And there are several reasons for that. And some of them are to be blamed on the medications, and some of them are to blame on the patients. We'll take the patients first. Many people who are mentally ill develop this attitude that nobody can help them, and they're stuck in that life, and that's the way it goes. So they won't seek treatment. They won't seek medication. They just try to go from day to day. And one other thing about that is they don't have the knowledge about what is available. They just think that's the way it is. Another group of patients will find a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, and go to them. And one group will not ever go on medication for whatever reason. Spiritual belief, or they think it's going to ruin their body or whatever. They won't take any medication. Now, that doesn't mean it would have worked for them, but they completely strike that out and try to go it through just therapy. And There's all kind of, we'll get into how, what other therapies there are rather than just talk therapy in a minute. The other group of patients comes in, they're willing to take the medication. The medication starts to work for them. It's really working well for 6 months. And they go, hell, I don't need this medication anymore. I'm feeling great. So they stop taking the medication and then they sink right back into their depression. The other group is the people who take the medication for 3 weeks. Now, they tell you when you start on medication, it's going to take a month or two for this stuff to work. Well, they try that month, didn't work, so they just stop. So there are a lot of reasons that are the faults of the patients themselves that they don't get therapy.
Right. Either they don't take it, they don't think they need it, or take it and then decide, oh, now I'm good, and don't realize that it is the medication that is helping them feel good. They figure like, oh, I'm cured. I'm all good. I don't really need this anymore. And then don't recognize and then stop it. Or maybe, like you said, we'll try for 30 days and not wait for the full 6 weeks, or not say, well, this one isn't working, let's try something else. Because as you mentioned, there's different medications for bipolar than there are for depression. It has very much to do with what in my brain is not balanced, what is off, right? Like you mentioned lithium. So if my brain is not producing it, if I need this, and then I give my brain what is deficient, then I'm good to go. I mean, there's a physiological reason behind a lot of these things, but it's not obvious what the missing pieces are. There's unfortunately a lot of, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work. All right, well, let's try this, and that didn't work. And that requires a lot of patience, which is really frustrating.
Well, I am a big advocate for trying to teach people in my groups that they are on a long journey, that there's no cure for any of these, and you have to be vigilant and keep working. And if you do that, you'll have a decent life, or maybe even a good life. You'll have some up times and some down times, but you can do very well. You can have a family, you can have a business, you can do all these things. So many people just accept where they are, and that's it. They don't get any better. Now, we have a crisis in the United States, in fact, all over the world. The number of people going into the mental health field, the professionals, is dwindling. And that's going to cause a problem in the next 8 or 10 years. And then there's the fact that there is definitely a social divide between who gets help and who doesn't. If you make good money and you can afford the $200 or $300 it costs of session, then you'll get good help. But what about all those people who live from paycheck to paycheck, and you get mentally hurt, and you want to get help, and they tell you it's going to cost you $200. What do? Your insurance probably won't pick it up, because they do everything they can to not have to pay for mental illness. They fight it every day. They don't want to add that to their list of illnesses that they have to pay for. You think it's bad for physical conditions, it's terrible for mental illness. I was fortunate enough, my family made good money. I made good money so I could pay. But in my groups, I do two mental health support groups a week. And most of these people were really struggling to find the help. What this country of ours does is give them these clinics and put them on disability. And the clinics are so overrun and they can't help people. And a guy would come into a clinic, and he'd have to qualify to get to these clinics, and then they would come into the clinic and get an appointment, say they're in distress, they're really hurting, they're suicidal. Well, they may not get another appointment for 6 weeks. So the system is terrible. Insurance has caused many providers to have to not take insurance and to raise their rates. So it's a real problem. And the government, as far as I can tell, isn't doing much to help the situation. It's kind of like they got a blind eye. Since you can't see mental illness, you don't have to pay attention to it.
That's sad. Okay, so you're right now painting a pretty bleak picture where you say, hey, here's a problem. When you talk to people in your groups and you let them know, here's our expectations. Don't expect that it's going to be cured and you're going to be fine and just walk away. But you can have a good life. Expect and work toward the possibility of a good life. This is what is available for you. But then you're saying, but it's not really available for everyone because we struggle with the ability to pay for the things that are required. And the resources really aren't in place to help this. It seems like a lot of it, we're kind of on our own. And you already mentioned people are feeling frustrated, like, I'm stuck. There is absolutely nothing I can do anyway. So why bother? Why bother? So I would really, really hope that this conversation is going to go in a direction of saying, it's going to be okay. There is some hope. And here's something that you can do that's not going to cost you $200 a pop so that we can improve a little bit, feel a little bit better. And then if you feel a little bit better, then you're able to make some better choices and be able to move forward. So do you have some hope for us? Because,
well, yes. I have quite a bit of hope for people. I want to say one thing. I've done several podcasts that are from other countries, and the other countries are experiencing the same things. 20% of America is mentally ill, 60 million people. Same thing in Canada, same thing in Jamaica, Germany. I talk to people in Switzerland and New Zealand. They've all got the same problems.
They're probably working with humans like we are, right? So this is a human problem, not a problem because we are in the United States. It's because—
Correct. It is a human problem. And then the response is what is so bad. Mental illness is not going to go away. The only thing that can help is the treatment becomes available to everybody. Now, when I talk to these people overseas, and we sit here in the U.S. and talk about our insurance system, and we think going on totally government-controlled insurance is the way to go. That's not what these people tell me. Everything, if you have the sniffles or you break a leg or you've got some normal problem in, say, Canada, get it fixed right away. No problem. Quick. No cost. But if you have something like mental illness that they can't see, you're lucky to get into somebody to help you in 3 to 6 months, and you still got to pay for it. So there is no ideal system that we can look at and say that's what we want to do. The whole thing comes from perception. The government, people in government, people across the world and in the U.S. can't see mental illness. In other words, you see a guy with a broken leg, you can see him sitting there in trouble. But you can't see in the mind of somebody who's mentally ill, and you can't see how it is destroying their lives, and you can't see the agony they're in, so you turn a blind eye to it. And the government does the same thing. I can guarantee you that everybody in the government knows somebody who has mental illness. It isn't a big priority to them. So we got to come up with some kind of system that says, hey, mental illness is just as important as physical illness.
Okay. And that would be wonderful. And as we have more and more conversations and help to talk about it, I think it helps increase awareness, which is part of why we're having this conversation today, so that people won't just turn a blind eye. They become aware. And people who are struggling recognize, oh, hey, I'm not alone.
No.
And then people who are listening who aren't dealing with it get their eyes opened a little bit that this is a problem. However, we cannot wait until all of society wakes up and figures out things. In the meantime, we got to be able to do something. So what kinds of things would you recommend to somebody who is struggling?
The big thing that can help is reduce the tremendous stigma against mental illness and give your support to someone you know who is suffering. Don't just tell them to go take a walk, they'll feel better, but really say, God, how are you today? Is there anything I can do? All the good things you'd give if your child had pneumonia or something. Well, you got to do the same thing to people in your sphere who are mentally suffering. So that's the big thing. And, you know, getting the government, the insurance companies, that's a long call, but it can be accomplished.
Absolutely. So that is good advice for all of us who are in a supportive role, to be able to say, hey, if you put this in the terms of a broken leg, how would I treat someone? How would I respond? What kind of compassion would I be able to bring up? And that is excellent advice. What kinds of things can you say to someone who's they're in those shoes of, I am struggling? What can I do?
Well, I'll tell you, since a normal therapy is so expensive and pills don't work all the time, I would say that most of my group members throughout the years, I've been here doing it 8 years and I've seen over 1,000 people, most of them gravitate toward groups because they can feel like they are not alone. They can get some friendships. They can talk to people who have, even though each case is different, there's a lot of similarities, and they can talk to people and learn about the different medications, the different therapies. And that is why groups are so important. And they're all over the country. In every city, there are mental health support groups. And if you want to find one in your community, just Google it. Say mental health support groups, and it'll come up. There's an organization in the U.S. called NAMI, N-A-M-I, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness. You can get all kind of information from them. But you got to seek it. You can't just sit home and say, oh, it's me, I'm terrible.
Okay, now we're talking. Okay, I'm struggling. I am struggling. What do I do? I don't have insurance. I don't have money. But I got Google. And so I can look up this NAMI. This National Alliance for Mental, what was it?
National Alliance for Mental Illness.
Mental illness. Okay. And find a support group. And by finding a support group and a community, because like you say, if we're talking 20% of the populace are dealing with this, then they're surrounded by 80% of people who aren't struggling with this, who don't understand, because a lot of times we really can't understand until we have had that experience. But once we connect with people who do understand, people who have been through this, and then they can say, hey, Steve, this is what worked for me. And here are some things that you might want to try. Here are some medications. This is what is available. And once I understand what is available and I feel heard and seen and understood, then I can take the next step and feel like, okay, well, let me try this one and see if it works for me. And if it doesn't, maybe Bob over here has another suggestion of something that I can do.
That's right.
So we need to reach out and we need to take the first step ourselves to make those connections, get in that group, find that community for someone who has the answers, because probably the person to my right and to my left might not have them.
That's right. And I told you earlier, there are treatments that are not medical, pill related.
Oh, yay. Let's talk about those.
You won't find the information on those usually unless you go to a therapist or a group. But there are things, and I'll just quickly say them, EMDR, cognitive behavioral therapy, intensive outpatient therapy, cognitive therapy. There are all these things that are available, but you've got to look them up and find them. These seem to be more readily paid by insurance than some of the other things. And they can be done in a group session or one-on-one. And people in my groups have found them very effective. If you are really pretty bad, there's always shock therapy. Big question of that is what happens to your memory. So you got to really look into that. But there are things that happen, and there's simple things you can do. If you're very anxious all the time, you can get a method called tapping, where you just tap your chest. You can put on a rubber band on your wrist, and when some bad thought comes into your head, you snap the rubber band. These things kind of sound simple and nutty, but they're effective. Now, they're not going to change your life, but they're going to help you while you're experiencing whatever you're experiencing.
And that's wonderful to be able to have some additional resources like the ones that you just mentioned that we can access for free.
Right.
I mean, a rubber band doesn't cost me very much at all. And the tapping, I mean, I can just watch some videos on YouTube and be able to get a quick idea of here's what I need to do. And then that's something that helps to reduce anxiety. And it's, I appreciate that you're bringing that there's more than one way to do things, because according to Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who talks about mental illness, particularly about trauma, is we can go top down, which is where we work from a therapy where we're going to talk about it. Maybe we're going to use some medication. And we can also work on things from the bottom up, which sometimes they call somatic therapies, things that we work with our body. And then that helps to calm our mind. And so having more than one method of approach can help maybe a broader range of people. And you might say, well, I can afford this, or I can't afford that, or I prefer this, or this works for me. Just gives us some more options to be able to address the issues. So I appreciate you bringing up some different things.
No problem. One thing I want everybody to know is that with medication, if you find a medication that works, it will probably help something. But most of us who have gotten the best help from medication is because we have our own cocktail, which means we have a group of medications. I take four. I have people in my group who take 6, 8, 10, but you mix them all up and they'll do the job. So don't just think that you can take one medication and you'll be safe forever. And don't think that medication is going to work and be enough for you. So there's a lot of, that's why it's such a long road. There's so much stuff involved in battling these diseases that it's up to you what you do.
Right. And as you mentioned, the cocktail, this might be a personal cocktail that works to address whatever deficiencies or whatever issues are going on in your mind, because it's not that, you know, A goes to B and it goes right back. Like in math, they call it one to one and onto, where I know what the, if it's this cause and this effect, and I can go back and forth. the symptoms might look the same and the root cause might be different. And so it might take, like you say, it might take three or four things over here or seven or eight in order to find out what matches the needs of your brain, of your body to be able to function optimally.
And one thing everybody has to realize is this isn't their fault. They didn't cause themselves to have this mental illness. It's a chemical imbalance, but more often it is caused by trauma. Many of my group members have been raped by their family members, by friend. I was raped by somebody I didn't know. Many have been beaten as a young kid. Many have been abused with language from their parents and friends that is very hurtful. Many have been bullied. So it comes from, doesn't have to come from something you did. Now it can, if you killed somebody, that might do it. But most of the time, it's from circumstance. And so you don't have to go through life blaming yourself.
And that matters. We need to have compassion for ourselves. And I appreciate one of the treatments that you mentioned, the EMDR. I know that's specifically used to help with trauma because these things are our bodies and our minds are very connected. And the traumas and the issues that we have endured affect us physically, mentally, and emotionally. And it can affect our brain. It can even cause issues. Like I have friends that it caused cancer. So it can cause physiological problems. And that understanding that connection matters. Is there anything that you want to make sure that we cover before we close today?
Well, I've written a book. It's my memoir. It's called Teetering on a Tightrope, My Bipolar Journey. It is all about my life from age 7 or 8 through when I was raped, through the rest of my life, through my recovery. And it gets down and dirty and shows and tries to explain just how badly I was all those years. It doesn't hold any punches. It affects sexual ability, impulsiveness, mania, everything. These are things that people just don't really understand can happen to you just because, as they say, you're nutty. So
that's an easy out for people who don't understand. So as you have written your book, it sheds light. And so people can say, oh, wow, that affected everything. And maybe, oh, wow, I felt that way. So it can help people recognize that they're not alone. So I appreciate you talking with me today.
Sure. Enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on.
In closing, I'd like to share a quote by John Green. He said, "There is hope, even when your brain tells you there isn't." I invite all of our listeners today to find and embrace hope. See you next time on Linda's Corner.
Thanks for listening. Please share and subscribe to help us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to heal your life from the inside out, there is a free video series at hopeforhealingfoundation.org. Just click on the free stuff tab. I also invite you to grab a copy of one of my books, like Crushed, A Journey Through Depression, and You Got This, an action plan to calm fear, anxiety, worry, and stress. See you next time on Linda's Corner.